All right, good morning. Good to see you here this morning. Obviously, we have a reduced number this morning, but we're glad you're able to be here. Continuing our study of the family. And so this morning, we're going to be looking at proper attitudes for a study of the family. I don't know if you have, I did send it out, I believe, on Thursday, so it wasn't last minute. I did send out the material that we're going to be discussing. So I sent out not only the next lesson, but I also sent out the survey that was done by a brother named Tom Rainwater up in New York. And I don't know if you've had the time to look at the details of that survey, but if you have not, I would encourage you to do so. And we will reference the survey as we go through this study. Granted, it's a small sample size, but I think statistically it shows some things that we might expect and maybe some things that we didn't expect. Obviously, there's differences between men and women and husbands and wives. And so I think it's interesting to take a look at that survey to maybe highlight where some of the commonality is and where some of the differences are. Really, this study is this morning is about I need to study God's will of the family. Okay? If you have years of marriage behind you, if you're not married yet, if you are newly married, or maybe you're in the middle of your marriage, all of us need to study God's will on the family. Look in Proverbs chapter 1. This is not specifically about the family, but in general. Does anyone remember the context of the book of Proverbs? Who wrote it? Solomon wrote it. And who was he primarily writing it to? Especially the first, at least the first part of the book we know. Children. He's writing it to his children. And so if you look in Proverbs chapter 1, verse 20, wisdom calls aloud outside. She raises her voice in the open squares. She cries out in the chief concourses, at the openings of the gates in the city. She speaks her words. How long, you simple ones, will you love simplicity? For scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge. Turn at my rebuke. Surely I will pour out my spirit on you. I will make my words known to you. Because I have called, and you refused. I have stretched out my hand, and no one regarded. Because you disdained all my counsel, and would have none of my rebuke. I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your terror comes. When your terror comes like a storm and your destruction comes like a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come upon you, then they will call on me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but they will not find me. Because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord, they would have none of my counsel and despised my every rebuke. Therefore they shall eat the fruit of their own way and be filled to the full with their own fancies. For the turning away of the simple will slay them, and the complacency of fools will destroy them. But whoever listens to me will dwell safely and will be secure without fear of evil. When's the time to get ready for a storm? Before, right? We've got a storm bearing down on the Gulf right now. Do you think those people got ready beforehand? I can tell you some didn't. And now they're the ones in trouble. And it's the same way with your marriage. It's not a matter of, oh, I'm going to get married, and then when problems hit, now I'm going to look for help. Well, it's too late. It's too late. If you neglect it, as this passage says, you're going to reap what you sow. So if you're not looking at God's will for the family before you have a family, and then you encounter problems, which you will, it's too late. This is especially true for the young. How many have we seen? I forget, I don't know what the statistics are now, but I know years ago the statistics were 90% of teenage marriages end in divorce within the first 2 years. 90%. Do you think those people were prepared for marriage? No, they weren't. Some people get married thinking it will solve their problems. Getting married is not going to solve your problems. It's only going to add to the list of problems that you have. Look at Job 32. Where do people get marriage advice? But if they're going to get advice, where are some of the typical places people turn? Friends and family. What about people that are older? Is that a good place to go? In general, right? It is, usually. We just went through this comprehensive study of Job. Look at Job chapter 32 and verse 6. So Elihu, the son of Barachel, the Buzite, answered and said, I am young in years and you are very old. Therefore I was afraid and dared not declare my opinion to you. I said, age should speak and multitude of years should teach wisdom. But there is a spirit in man and the breath of the Almighty gives him understanding. Great men are not always wise, nor do the aged always understand justice. Therefore I say, listen to me, I will also declare my opinion. So should age bring wisdom? Should. Does it always bring wisdom? No, it does not. What's the determining factor? Look over at Psalms 119. And in verse 99 it says, I have more understanding than all my teachers, for your testimonies are my meditation. I understand more than the ancients because I keep your precepts. So, age usually, or in general, should be a good place to go, right? But it depends on what type of counsel that older resource depends on. If they're not coming from a perspective of God's will for the family, the advice they may give may not be correct. So let me ask you a question. Are you, at whatever age you are right now, are you prepared to give marriage advice? Have you ever given marriage advice? And if so, can you turn to scriptural references for people to ask you about companionship? Why did God institute marriage? Authority in the marriage relationship? Caring love? Affection? Sexual intimacy? Parenthood? Are you qualified right now? Do you feel like if someone came and talked to you, you could go to the scriptures and give good advice on those topics? It's a question we should all be asking of ourselves. And if you have given advice, looking back, has it been good advice? Look at Matthew chapter 18. Matthew chapter 18 and verse 7. Woe to the world because of offenses. For offenses must come, but woe to that man by whom the offense comes. What is Jesus saying here? Offenses are going to come, right? But if you're the person by which that offense is someone else stumbling, it's the idea of being a stumbling block, right? If you are the reason why that offense happened, woe to you. And so if you're giving out marriage advice, and it's the wrong advice, Jesus says, woe to that man. Now, can change be difficult? Do you like change? I don't. Right? I know many of you in the audience, and I can tell you right now, y'all don't like change. Change can be difficult. If you've been married 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years, do you need to change anything, or is everything good? I can tell you from this study, just a little bit we've done so far, guess where the biggest finger gets pointed? I told you I wasn't standing up here as an expert. But the more, and here's what's interesting, is I've talked to multiple people. My dad, one of them, has taught this study I don't know how many times. Been married almost 60 years. And he says every time he goes through the study, the person that gets the most out of it is him and their relationship. That's at almost 60 years of marriage. So if you've been married 5 or 10 or 15 years and you think, I don't need this, I would encourage you to think again. Look at Acts chapter 7. Acts chapter 7 and verse 23. Now, when he was 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. This is talking about Moses. So, Moses at 40, what kind of man was Moses at 40? Remember what happened when he was 40 years old? Still pretty impetuous, right? Went and slayed the Egyptian. Thought he was going to lead Israel. He fled. Now, look down in verse 30. And when 40 years had passed, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire in a bush in the wilderness of Mount Sinai. So now he's 80. 40 years have gone by. And now God wants him to, again, you're going to lead my people. Was Moses the same man at 80 as he was at 40? I think not. You ever feel like you're too old to change? You ever feel like, well, if I change, my spouse needs to change too? Or how about I don't need to change, they do? I'm too old. Well, that's not an excuse. We looked last week at the increasing number of people that had been married longer getting divorced. It's up over 100% from the last 10 years as far as the number of people in their 50s and above that are getting divorced. So it's happening. People that have been married longer are getting divorced more frequently. And if you think that you're not susceptible to it, I would encourage you to rethink that idea. What about you're too young? What about I don't need this, I'm too young? Look at 2 Chronicles chapter 34. Starting in verse 1, Josiah was 8 years old when he became king, and he reigned 31 years in Jerusalem. And he did what was right in the sight of the Lord, and walked in the ways of his father David. He did not turn aside to the right hand or to the left. For in the 8th year of his reign, while he was still young, he began to seek the God of his father David. And in the 12th year, he began to purge Judah and Jerusalem of the high places and wooden images, and the carved images and the molded images. Can you be too young? Josiah was 16 years old when he started seeking the ways of the Lord. You think, I'm newly married. I'm happy. We don't have any problems. Everything's great. Or I'm dating, potentially engaged, or just have a serious girlfriend or boyfriend, and you think, everything's great. Why do I need to do this? We're just young. We're just enjoying being together. Again, I would encourage you to look at God's will for the family. Look over at 1 Timothy chapter 5. Here's a fun one. You're Timothy. You're the preacher that the Apostle Paul has left to help and support this church. And he says in 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 1, do not rebuke an older man, but exhort him as a father, younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, younger women as sisters, with all purity. Older men and women apparently can still need to make changes. We know Timothy was a younger man, whatever that means, probably mid-30s. How would you like to approach an older brother or sister in the church and tell them, hey, some changes you need to make? And obviously Paul is encouraging Timothy to do it with respect, but the fact remained that it needed to be done. So again, regardless of your age, young, middle-aged, old, middle-aged, by the way, very wide definition of that, So the question really comes personally to you. Do you feel like there are changes that you need to make in how you deal with your family? Well, who's to blame? Look over in Ezekiel chapter 18. If there are problems, if there are things that need to be changed, whose fault is it? Ezekiel chapter 18 and verse 24. But when a righteous man turns away from his righteousness and commits iniquity and does according to all of the abominations that the wicked man does, shall he live? All the righteousness which he has done shall not be remembered because of the unfaithfulness of which he is guilty and the sin which he has committed. Because of them he shall die. Yet you say, the way of the Lord is not fair. Hear now, O house of Israel, is it not my way which is fair and your ways which are not fair? When a righteous man turns away from his righteousness, commits iniquity, and dies in it, it is because of the iniquity which he has done that he dies. Again, when a wicked man turns away from the wickedness which he committed, and does what is lawful and right, he preserves himself alive. Because he considers and turns away from all the transgressions which he committed, he shall surely live, he shall not die. Yet the house of Israel says, the way of the Lord is not fair. O house of Israel, is it not my ways which are fair, and your ways which are not fair? So, who was Israel blaming for their problems? God. Well, God, this is your fault. This is your ways are too, they're not fair. They're hard. It's not working because of what you gave us. If you have problems, or if you've had problems in your marriage, who do you blame? Who do you blame? Whose fault is it? I know in the past I've blamed a lot of people except myself. I don't know that I've specifically blamed God. But do we put the blame where it should be? Look at Proverbs chapter 19. Verse 3 says, the foolishness of a man twists his way and his heart frets against the Lord. Other versions may say rage against the Lord. When things don't go the way we want them to, many times we can blame God. Why did I get into a bad marriage? How come my marriage isn't working out? Is it random chance? If you've been in an unhappy marriage, if you've experienced divorce, are you bitter? I can tell you there are people who are still married today that when you ask them about marriage, you're not going to get a very good answer. They're not happy in their marriage. They exist in their marriage. I can tell you, listening to the radio, there's a particular set of hosts that I listen to that I'm get more and more irritated. Everything out of their mouth about their marriage is negative. Do you know people like this? Have you ever worked with someone like this or been around people that everything that comes out of their mouth, and they use terms like my old lady or my old man, and everything's just negative. Negative, negative, negative. I worked in a place like that years and years ago where it was just negative. Everything, it weighs on you. You feel it. People that have been married a long time, you would think that they would be happy. No, they're not. They're just getting along. Rick?
We have responsibility in the pocket of people. There are no positive. We allow them to behave in a positive manner because of the way that we interact with them. If you enable somebody, if you're not honest with somebody, if you allow them to carry on that toxic behavior, and you're not upfront and transparent with them that something they say or something they do creates that negative, that bitterness that you feel. And that can happen between a spouse, that can happen with your children, that can happen with a coworker, that can happen with anybody. And if you're not open and honest with them, that when you're with them, all they do is complain, and you come away with it feeling like just exhausted because you just listened to them complain for an hour. Well, did you ever tell them that listening to them complain for an hour makes you feel exhausted? You're not giving them the opportunity to change. So that's where, in your previous example, the
and that takes courage, right? And a lot of people don't like conflict. And you're right. You should. You should have the courage to say, hey, in a respectful manner, this is what your impact is. But so many of us may not want to say anything because, first of all, that person may be very passionate and we feel like if we say something, it's going to create conflict and we don't want to do that. But you're right. You're absolutely right. We allow it to happen. Billy. So many times it starts with the attitude. People aren't going to make the changes if they don't have the attitude. Right. But the attitude also then to accept those things.
instructed on this in multiple ways that we have to be joyous.
What do you think husbands and wives are looking for most in a spouse? Kind of building on what Billy's saying. If you look at the survey, if you look at pages 6 and 7, what do you think the number one thing a husbands and wives agree on this, men and women agree on this? Now, granted, this survey was primarily believers, but what do you think the number one thing they're looking for in a spouse? Overwhelmingly, over 80%, they're looking for a spiritual foundation. Does that surprise you? That that's the number one answer for men and women? They're looking for a spiritual foundation. Are they looking for the right thing? Absolutely, right? What is the point of marriage? Why did God create woman? Helper, companion. Companion to do what?
Get to heaven.
Ultimately get to heaven. For this life as well, right? But ultimately to help someone get to heaven. So again, ask yourself, what is your relationship or marriage based on? Is it based on a common understanding between the two of you that we are building a spiritual foundation, number one? So again, is there anybody in this audience that can actually tell themselves, I don't need this study? And if you can, you're welcome to exit stage left. Good point. Probably true. So do we believe that God's Word has the answers? Look over in 1 Timothy chapter 4. Starting in verse 1, now the Spirit expressly says that in latter times some will depart from the faith, giving heed to deceiving spirits and doctrines of demons, speaking lies and hypocrisy, having their own conscience seared with a hot iron, forbidding to marry and commanding to abstain from foods which God created to be received with thanksgiving by those who believe and know the truth. For every creature of God is good, and nothing is to be refused if it is received with thanksgiving, for it is sanctified by the word of God and prayer. So how did Paul say these people were going to be able to defend against all of these things that he just mentioned? Who's not going to be carried away by these concepts? Those who believe and know the truth. So let's just stop and think about it a minute. 2021, do we have things that are out there that are deceitful? Do we have things in the media that portray ideas related to families and their relationships that are contrary to what we read about in the Bible? Most of them, right? Most of them. Look at people on TV. We talked about a little bit this last week. The people on television or celebrities. Aren't they always the ones giving marriage advice? And the ones talking about how great their relationships are? Seems that way. We're soulmates. This is my fifth marriage, but we're soulmates. What about their hypocrisy? They pretend to live this life. If they're even living a traditional lifestyle, they pretend to just be so happy, so successful, everything's great, listen to me. Or those that are living alternative lifestyles, again, will tell you how successful, how positive, how great things are going. Yet we see time after time after time, those relationships fail. But that's what we're being told, which is deceitful. And then the hypocrisy of those who proclaim to be so happy, positive, and successful in their relationships, only to find out they go through multiple relationships. What about in religion? Do we see things in this verse that have happened in religion? What about forbidding to marry? Where do we see that in religion? Catholic Church. The only safeguard is to believe and know the truth. So who's behind all of this? Satan's behind all of this. And we looked a little bit at that last week. He is man's adversary, and to think anything different, you're selling him short. Psalms chapter 19. Probably all of us could quote this by heart, just because we also know the song. The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. Do you know people that have been married for a long time that don't believe in following God's will? I actually know a few couples that are very happy in their marriages that don't necessarily follow God's law. But here's interesting. I had a conversation with one, and he said, I don't believe in the Bible, but I believe in Christian values, and that's how I live my life. If you're not paying attention to your marriage and looking to God's will for answers, can you be successful? You can. What are your chances? As opposed to, if you are actively looking at God's will for the family and trying to implement the things that He has given us and you're trying to make the changes, which has a better chance for success? It doesn't happen by accident. The numbers of people that happen to make it by accident are infinitesimal compared to those that don't try to follow God's law and their relationships fall apart. Second Timothy chapter 3. Yeah. And you're absolutely right, and the values that Christianity brings have been adopted by atheists, but yet they struggle to explain why. If you really get into the whys of why an atheist would promote Christian values, typically you'll get an answer along the lines, well, it's what's best for society, so the mores of a society that makes a society better should be adopted based on the betterment of the society. But it's a very slippery slope, because then you start getting into defining what is better for the society. And so you're right, people have benefited from Christian values and have tried to adopt some of them even without accepting the idea of God or of Jesus as the Christ, the Messiah. We're actually in a good place to stop before I go on, because we only have 1 minute left. Anybody have any other comments? Got a minute, 60 seconds? Jeff? And I think it's important for young people to understand the magnitude of that decision, because what you're referencing is so many people don't have that, this is it. Well, if this one doesn't work out, I'll just find another one. But God's law says, no, there's a very limited reason you can ever get divorced. But for the most part, your decision is your decision. At 19, 18, 21, 25, this is your spouse, for better or for worse. But you're right about having that time after the kids are gone. Someday that's going to happen to me. I look forward to it when it does. Thank you all for your attention. I appreciate it.